position, a particular reason stress. Particular topics. The Rupa Goswami praise millions of tongues and millions of years to chant the holy name of Krishna. Because in that holy name of Krishna, you chant the holy name, he's desirous of millions of tongues to chant the holy name, and millions of ears to hear that holy name. And that holy name enters into the courtyard of one's heart. It conquers the activities of the mind, and all the senses become controlled. Srimad Bhagavatam states that certainly that heart is steel framed, which upon once uttering the holy name of Krishna, tears do not well up in the eyes, the hair stand on end, the body trembling, the voice falter. That is, it is the nature of the holy name being endowed with all the transcendental potencies and divine qualities of Krishna, that when the jiva soul comes in contact with that name, the ecstasy and the love surging from his heart cannot be contained. The mortal body is not designed to be able to contain such ecstasies, and therefore they burst forth in the form of what we call ecstatic symptoms. And if we're not experiencing such ecstasy on contact with them, then we know that our hearts are steel framed. Krishna is likened, the Prahlad Maharaj, to a magnet to which iron filings are irresistibly drawn. If the iron is not drawn to the magnet, it means that the iron filings are rusty or dirty, or something is covering and concealing their inherent nature. So if our hearts are not so spontaneously attracted to the holy name, which is the very form in which Krishna appears in this age, we know that our hearts are covered by the dirt and debris of material desires, which inevitably manifest themselves as offenses to the holy name. And in this age of Kali, when offenses to the holy name are very prominent, especially the tendency to blaspheme the great souls who have dedicated their lives to the propagating of the holy name, we have no other recourse, no other shelter, no other means of atonement than to take shelter of the holy name. And if that attraction to the holy name is not manifest, then you understand. Ours is still there. And for such a hard heart, there is no means to melt it other than the Holy Name. So, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told Rupa Goswami that it is humility alone that can attract the all-attractive Krishna to an insignificant jiva. When Krishna sees that, oh, this jiva is serving my devotees, he becomes so attracted and he showers his blessings upon that fortunate soul. And there is no other way to attract Krishna and through this. This root of all virtues. And the essence of Mahaprabhu's teachings is condensed into Shikshastika. Kirtaniya Sarahari, that when one feels himself truly within his heart, more tolerant than a tree, lower than a stone of fruit, devoid of all sense of false prestige, ready to offer all respects to others, including those who disrespect ourselves, then one can chant the Holy Name constantly. It's not possible to chant the Holy Name constantly unless you have a taste for chanting the Holy Name. A taste based on a connection, a relationship with the name, who is not different from his name. That connection cannot be established or nurtured without humility. And therefore, the great soul who was awarded the epithet Namacharya by Mahaprabhu himself, Haridas Thakur, was chanting the Holy Name constantly because he had a taste, an irresistible attraction to the Holy Name due to his humility. One should chant the Holy Name of the Lord in a humble state of mind, feeling himself to be more tolerant than a tree. And Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami breaks the analogy down. What is the characteristics of a tree? The standing out in all kinds of weather, offering shelter, shade, fuel to those who cut it down, fruits, flowers. It's often, it's very life for the welfare of others, even when those others are cutting it down and chopping it up. It continues offering itself in the service of others. Haridas Thakur, when he was arrested and beaten, not like a punishment, it was meant to be an execution, with not one executioner, but all the Muslim executioners together, assigned by the Qazi, to beat him so viciously that if somehow he survived the beating, public beating, disgraceful, humiliating demise in the public square, if he somehow survives the first one, take him to the next market and continue. They dragged him through all the 22 markets of the town, beating him so severely that he did not die. He did not stop chanting. And he was sometimes seen to be smiling, as if relishing some deep internal experience. Other times he would become sorrowful as he prayed, Lord, please, do not hold these jivas accountable for what they've done to me. And at the end of the 22nd marketplace, when he had not forfeited his life, those executioners told him, Haridas, it was our order by the Gauri to kill you. The fact that you did not die means that we must forfeit our lives for failure to execute his order. And then Haridas felt compassion for them. He said, if my life is going to be the source of such trouble for you, then see. And he turned his senses inward to the core of his heart, with the lotus feet of Shishitanda Mahaprabhu, who were forever enshrined, and contemplating the mercy and love associated with those lotus feet. He said, as Rupa Goswami's prayer expresses, all his senses became inert. And even his life symptoms seemed to leave him, and he collapsed and appeared to be dead. So they dragged his body back to the palace gates and told the governor of his death. And the governor, who had just been implicated in this whole conspiracy, was sincerely sorry. And he said, at least award him a proper funeral. And the Kazi again intervened and said, no. The offense of this Haridas, who was so blessed to take birth in the Yavana race, but who took to the ways of the Vaishnavas, warrants that he does not even receive a proper funeral. Throw his body into the Ganges so that his soul will forever wander without finding peace. It was the Kazi's order. So as they tried to throw his body into the river, from his apparent dead condition, when Vishwambar, who sustains all life in creation, entered into his meditation and enlivened his senses again, he sat up erect. He was supposed to be dead. And everybody backed off. But then it was their order. They tried to throw him in the Ganges, but no matter how they pushed or pulled, he sat as immovable as a mighty mountain. Because Vishwambar had entered into his heart. Then, for the sake of the Leela to continue, Vishwambar removed his immovable presence and to fulfill the desire of Gangadevi to carry him back to Fulya. The executioners were able to put him in the Ganges. Gangadevi carried him down to Fulya, where he emerged from the waters again, chanting Hare Krishna. And the people of the town were so elated to have him back in their presence after the long saga of being arrested and imprisoned, interrogated, taken to court, sentenced, and the whole series. they were so sorry for the ordeals he had to undergo because of his welfare activity in distributing all the name. He said, don't be sorry on my behalf. And at that point, most of the Muslims who were involved in his attempted execution, they came down to Puglia. They said, having seen what we witnessed in you, we understand that you are that peer, that great Muslim saint, who is worthy of our respect and surrender, and they bowed down. And they all became elevated by his association, whereas those who did not, they were destroyed. And later in the Mahaprakash, when Mahaprabhu called for Haridas, he called him by Haridas, he told him, your body is more pure and exalted than my own. Haridas, one Muslim family, Mahaprabhu was praising Haridas. And then in the Mahaprakash is basically a 21-hour period when the Lord consistently revealed his Aishwarya nature. He would do that intermittently from time to time when he seemed to like lose track of his excesses. Then he would immediately correct himself. But for 21 hours consistently, as if it was the most natural and proper thing to do, he was revealing himself to the devotees as all the avatars who they worshipped and cherished in their hearts. And he called the different devotees and narrated pastimes which he had performed with them before they realized that he was the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And he told them things, revealed in public things that nobody else had ever known. And when he called my Haridas, he revealed that when those Muslim executioners tried with all their might to take away your life, whatever reasons people give for my appearance in this world, I appeared at that time to destroy them all. I appeared with Sudarshan Chakra in my hand, descended straight from Vaikuntha to destroy them. You were praying for their deliverance. I did not know what to do. Sudarshan would not leave my hand. But I could not tolerate seeing you abused like that. So I stood over you. I took you within my heart. And the beating came down on my own back. And when Mahaprabhu would turn around, everyone saw the marks of the clubs and the whips. And his chadar was drenched in blood as it clings to his transcendental body. And Haridas just fell down, crying, glorifying the Lord, glorifying the Lord's holy name. How in so many cases from different yugas, the Lord, when the devotees are put into difficult conditions, and it took such a holy name to save them. The king of all the demons tried to kill his saintly son, Pallad, took shelter of your name, and you protected him from harm. And when the Pandavas in exile had to face Durvasa's wrath, you took shelter of your name, and you came to them again. And when those evil-minded witches assaulted the goddess Parvati, she took shelter of your name and you came to her immediately. But I am so unfortunate, having fallen from your grace, I know nothing but misfortune. Still, you give me so much faith. You yourself have shown the world the glory of your holy name, if you can deliver a sinner like me so much more credit will be to your claim. And he concluded his prayers that after Mahaprabhu offered him every conceivable benediction, in Vaikuntha, in Goloka, anywhere, his prayer was, let me take birth, low birth, like a dog that inhales such joys, so the remnants that they spit out will be my foodstuffs. And when the devotees were offering obeisances as they were reunited with Mahaprabhu Jagannath Puri, and he was embracing them all, and that's where his heart was. He's lying prostrate in the dust of the road, further down. He did not consider himself worthy to even come before the Lord, even in calm. This is Haridas, who, when approached three nights in a row by the professional and most beautiful of all the prostitutes in the lands ruled by Chandrakan, he knew that she was coming to him every night just to bring about his ruination, his downfall, his humiliation, his imprisonment. He did not reject her. He told her, just wait, and I will fulfill all your desires. And she waited night after night after night. And the holy name melted her heart. And she repented and surrendered and became his disciple. Later, a similar incident, but it was not a prostitute. It was Mayadevi herself, who after three similar nights of hearing Haridas Thakur chanting, said that, I bewildered the minds of all living entities in the universe. This is Maya, the full bewildering potency of Krishna, full-fledged. You know, in this world, you know, some Mataji may have some youthful appearance that just drives men insane, mesmerizes, and hypnotizes, and bewilders them. An insignificant fragment of a spark of Maya's potency. This is Maya Devi personified in her full-fledged potency. Haridas was not seduced by her most concentrated charms. And she said, I bewilder the minds of everyone from Brahma on down. You alone was not captivated. She also surrendered to Haridas Thakur. I was initiated into the chanting of the holy name of Lord Rama by my husband, Lord Shiva. And that holy name of Ram bestows liberation. The holy name of Krishna awards love of God. And she begged Haridas for initiation. She became a disciple of Haridas. Did he become proud? He became all the more humble. He would not even go before the Lord. He was prostrate in the dust of the street further down. So what to do if the heart is so hard? These ecstatic symptoms do not manifest when our soul comes in contact with the all-attractive Krishna in the form of his name. Humility melts the heart. And in a humble state of mind, when we surrender to the mercy of Krishna manifest in Sri Guru, follow his instructions, which emphasize hearing the voice of the Lord, chanting the holy name of the Lord, Shrimadatta Sakata Krishna, Punyashravana Ketanaha, Vedantasto Hiladrani, Vidamoki Silicitam. Sri Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Paramatma in the heart of all living entities, himself from within takes up the cleansing process for those who relish hearing his message, chanting his holy name. So it is beyond our ability to overcome the conditioning since time immemorial and the deposits of layer upon layer of material desires and their concomitant defenses. So when we surrender to the mercy of the Lord, is coming through Guru, Sadhu, Shastra, by hearing his glories, chanting his holy name, by humility. The essence of which is serving his servants. The Lord is attracted to take up the cleansing process within our own hearts. And this is what Mahaprabhu has demonstrated in his Kundicha Bhajana. He himself led the devotees in cleansing the temple. And when it was so spotlessly clean and pure, cooling and soothing, what did he do? He cleansed it again to demonstrate that when all the material desires, gross material desires are gone, keep the process up because the subtle conditionings, the cynicisms, the subtle desires that will later manifest, the holy name alone can uproot the tendency to ever again take to material desires, sinful activities, defensive attitudes. Humility is just the natural state of the pure soul. Pride means we're taking credit for someone else's nature. If we're able to do anything right or anything good, it is simply Krishna's mercy. The credit, the glory goes to him. We try to usurp that credit for ourselves. That is false ego, which makes the heart so hard. It's the opposite of humility, which means we want to be a servant. Whatever the Lord wants to do through us, we're his eager, willing agents. Humility makes the heart soft. Krishna's lotus feet are so soft and delicate, he does not want to place them in a hard, cold place. But his holy name, endowed with all his transcendental potencies, will melt even the hardest heart and make it soft like butter. And Krishna is very attracted to soft butter, and he's irresistibly drawn to steal it away. And the heart becomes a suitable offering. After Krishna had revealed his wonderful leelas in this world and then returned to Golok, outside of a few great souls in Vrindavan, most of the world did not realize the actual nature of Krishna. That he's not an avatar of Vishnu, but he's the source of all the avatars, including Vishnu. So Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to reveal that Krishna is the avatari, which means he embodies and surpasses the glories of all the avatars. He surpasses them in his charming qualities. They're more human than superhuman, more natural than supernatural. just naturally steal away our heart. It's an unnatural condition that we're not irresistibly attracted to Krishna. And Mahaprabhu also established his abode is not Vatra or Dwarka, it's Vrindavan. The evidence of all this is the Srimad Bhagavatam. The highest method of worshipping and serving him is that of the gopis. And to attain love for Krishna is his supreme, ultimate goal of life. And Mahaprabhu emphasized developing a relationship with Krishna. So, in Shantaras, which is, you know, passive glorification of the Lord, there's no rasa. There's an acceptance of his supremacy and a wording of glorification. There's no actual relationship. Relationship begins with service. And service begins with dasya. He is our Lord and Master. We are his servants. But in dasya, there's a thorn in the shape of that distant reverence, that he's so high and mighty, we are so lowly and fallen, and there's a great distance in our love, appropriate for master-servant relationship. And in the worship of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, there is only Dasya Ras, Santa and Dasya. When one develops relationship, develops affection for the lotus feet of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and it can be in dasya ras, then what is affection for the lotus feet of Mahaprabhu, dasya ras mean? It's dedication to his mission, propagating, chanting of the holy names. And when one develops that affection for the lotus feet of Mahaprabhu, then in the words of Prabodhananda Saraswati, at some time, which you cannot predict, in the dark depths of your heart, spontaneously, at some point, the nectar emanating from the lotus feet of Srimati Radharani will flood your consciousness. What does that mean? That means the Madhurya, which is exclusive to Vrindavan, which includes the intimacy of Sakya, Vatsalya, and Madhurya, at which point your worship of Mahaprabhu becomes the worship of Radha and Krishna. Mahaprabhu becomes Radha and Krishna. As our love progresses into the bowels of Vrindavan. So such understandings of the glories of the holy name formerly evaded the understanding of even most of the great compilers of the scripture. And that is illustrated in the discussion the Yamadutas had with their master after their failure to arrest Ajamil. The Yamadutas were questioning if by once in a distracted way, not even calling for Krishna, calling for someone else, but using his name, Narayan. It's Ajamil, who had such a sinful life, was protected from our arrest and rescued by these four beautiful personalities. We don't even know who they were or where they came from. What is the purpose of all these elaborate descriptions of atonement described in the scriptures? If by one utterance of Nama Bas, not even meaning the Lord, meaning something else, calling someone else, freed him from all sinful reactions, what is the need for all these elaborate sections of scripture describing different forms of atonement? And what did Yamaraj answer? The glories of the holy name are so exalted, and our consciousness so fragmented, that even many of the great compilers of the world's scriptures could not understand the path of the Mahajan, which is known only to great souls like Swami Rupananda and the other Mahajans. Others cannot fathom the redemptive potency of the holy name and its ability to melt the heart in a war of life's ultimate goal, love for Krishna. Therefore, they describe so many other procedures. The direction to prem, not in the spirit of Aishwarya, but Madhurya, the love, the Vrijavasi spirit for Krishna. The nectar of the mellows of Vrindavan and the height of the spiritual peak of perfection, Srimati Radharani, which no one really understood before. Such are the gifts which Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has revealed to this world because he is an ocean of mercy. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also emphasized we have to follow in the footsteps of the Vrijavasis. That which Mahaprabhu is bestowing to this world is rare, so rare that Brahma cannot achieve it. He had to take birth as Haridas Thakura. Through the mercy of Lord Gauranga, attain an eternal position in the Vrindavan. Rare for even Lakshmi, who performed tapasya to enter into Brajlila, having questioned what is her, the benediction she sought, and she told her Lord, he said, to enter into Vrindavan, we must follow in the footsteps of the gopis. We must become a follower, a maidservant of the gopis, subordinate and subservient to them. Lakshmi Devi said, well, how can I do that? I'm subordinate and subservient only to you. What he was telling her, she had to learn how to collect cow dung, make patties, and carry pots of yogurt on her head, and milk cows, and she said, I can't do that. And he said, something, you can't enter Vrindavan. Lord Shiva was advised that he took birth in Manasarovara, and took the form of a gopi. He could enter Vrindavan, but he could still not enter the Vasudeva. It's posted as a card outside. So what is inconceivable and unattainable otherwise is the word of Vaishuddhi Maha. And the practice is the chanting of all you need. But the quality is Jinadapi Sinichina, Jaladapi Sinichina, Amagadama Nihina, Kirtaniya Siddhara. Krishna has a promise since time immemorial that in whatever way we approach him and worship him, he reciprocates accordingly. That promise was broken because he told the gopis that he had no way to reciprocate with them with their super excellent love. And he said, let your own glorious deeds and service be your only compensation. Govinda Ghosh has sung that Mahaprabhu's debt to the gopis will be repaid when Krishna of Braj becomes Gauranga of Navadvip. Because in himself, following the path tread by the gopis and distributing the unlimited ecstasies of his love to the devotees, he actually succeeded in reciprocating their love. So the depth of the Brijabasi's love is so inconceivable that Krishna himself cannot understand it. And therefore, as Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami introduces in the sixth verse of Adi Lila, desiring to understand the glory of Srimati Radharani's love, the wonderful qualities in him which she alone relishes to her love, and the sublime happiness she feels when she tastes the sweetness of his love. Lord Krishna, richly endowed with her emotions, appears from the womb of Sati Devi like the moon rising out of the ocean. So, this earth is the most blessed planet in all the universe, because on this earth is the town of Vrindavan. In the town of Vrindavan, the gopis are misfortunate because they have unparalleled love for Krishna. And that same love, Mahaprabhu, is distributing to this world. When Krishna at the Mathura, and he saw a hunchback lady, and he addressed her as, oh, the most beautiful one. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakura explains that Kubja is Prithvi, Mother Earth, Moon. She was bent over due to the burden she was carrying due to the unnecessary defense forces of demoniac kings who were posing as Kshatriyas, who were really just exploiting her. So Krishna told her, don't worry, I will relieve that burden. And then he straightened her out, and she became beautiful. And it's Krishna relieves the burden of the earth by killing all those demons. But in Chaitanya Lila, he kills the demoniac propensity. As we see, Jarasandha came back as the Nawab Hushain Shah. Kamsa came back as the Chankazi. They were not killed. Chankazi was awarded love of God, which destroyed his demoniac propensity for nature. And how was he given that love of God? After Mahaprabhu confronted him, after defying his order, he humiliated him before the world, but he won his heart. Because, as he said in his own words, you've chanted the holy names of Hari, Krishna, Narayan, and also Gaur Hari, all your offenses and all your sins are removed. Sankazi prayed, may my attraction and attachment to you never fade. So, the holy name is both the means and the ultimate goal of the spiritual quest. If our hearts are so hard, we cannot feel such ecstasy in coming in contact with the holy name, it means that they're still friends. They become hard for the true desires and offenses. But the holy name is both the means and the end. By chanting the holy name under the guidance of the Guru Parampara, hearing the glories of the Lord, chanting his glories, serving the devotees, the heart will gradually soften and melt in Krishna's divine heart. Thank you very much. Are there any questions or comments?
Thank you very much for the talk. I have a couple of questions today. These are my related questions. I don't know how they're going to come up. The first question is, how can I cultivate the mind of being a servant? What is that thing which I should tell myself such that when I get up in the morning I realize that I am a servant?
It's obvious in everything that you do that you're servant. The question is, who are we serving? If we want relationship with Krishna, we have to attract him. And how can a jiva soul possibly attract Krishna? What can we do, insignificant jiva, to be attractive in the eyes of Krishna? There's only one thing. That's to serve his servants and to please his servants. It doesn't mean you forsake other responsibilities in your life, but you adjust and arrange everything so as to please the servants of Krishna. And that will attract him. And that is the only way to establish a relationship with him.
I have a follow-up on the same question. When you say serving is servants, following the instructions of the spiritual master through the service. But I think that the spiritual master's instructions are for our benefit. But we are not doing anything for him. When we listen to our superiors or something, it's always for our benefit. What are we giving in return? Nothing. It's always for our benefit, right? So I want to know practically, how can I practice being a servant? I want to feel that instead of seeing everybody serving me.
Yes, it's true that the spiritual master, as well as Krishna, they do not need our service. And that's why we always qualify that we serve the devotees in a way that's pleasing to them. And what's pleasing to the devotees is not offering them, it's not limited to offering them things they need. Because some devotees need things we can offer and some of them don't. It's pleasing them. And what is pleasing them? Seeing that our hearts are becoming softened. Seeing that we're making advancements in spiritual life. Seeing that we're developing love for Krishna and attraction to his service in this holy name. So you can say, that's, you know, for you, but it is, and it is. But Srila Prabhupada said that by preaching and service, you're doing good to others, and you're doing good to yourself. Serving Krishna is beneficial to everyone, yourself, and to others. But the key to serving the devotees is what pleases them. It's not based on what they need, although that is a consideration. It's based on pleasing them. So the spiritual master gives instructions for our own purification. But that pleases him when he sees that we're following his instructions sincerely and developing our love for Krishna, our taste for the holy name, and the qualities of humility. That pleases him, and that's the best service. But there's six varieties of loving exchange. We deal with, you know, giving gifts, receiving gifts. Revealing the mind in confidence and receiving instructions. Giving prasad, receiving prasad. These are all, these six loving exchanges are all forms of service. So service is a consistent element in all Vaishnava relationships. How the service is expressed and offered is based on what is pleasing to the devotees according to the circumstances.
Sorry, now we were discussing how we can please the devotees, but that does not mean in our day-to-day life we see so many non-devotees. And I want to know how we can even tell ourselves that we are even servants for them because they are part and parcel of Krishna. So my concern is that the mood of being a servant, it needn't be confined to only devotees, right? It should be, so I'm not able to put in that point that, okay, I'm a servant to everyone. That is what I want to cultivate. Practicing being a servant in both, you know, devotional life as well as the other life also. School life or whatever. Mm-hmm. Anybody we see, that mood of being a servant should come, and that is what I want to practice.
So, the six loving exchanges is basically three different types of exchange, each with two aspects. One towards superiors, one towards juniors, or however you want to say it. You reveal the mind in confidence to superiors. You give worthy instructions to juniors. The principle of service is consistent in all relationships. How it's applied depends on the person's position. And this is So to non-devotees, we offer service in whatever will uplift their consciousness. If we can't tell somebody about Krishna for some reason, you can give them prasadam, they can hear the holy name of Krishna, they can see qualities in you that makes them appreciate devotees. Because Srila Prabhupada said, when people appreciate devotees, they're making advancements in spiritual life. So just setting an example that others appreciate the service to them, because that's helping them advance in spiritual life. So yes, service is not confined to devotees only. It's service is qualified by being pleasing to the devotees. So we interact with non-devotees in a way that's appropriate, which is verified by being a pleasure to the devotees.
Thank you very much. I promise this will be the last one. The thing is, when you said setting an example, I've noticed that we come across in our day-to-day life instances where even when we try to set example, the patience is tested. So that is when my question comes.
Whose patience is tested?
I mean, in a sense, we are not so qualified that we can continue trying to be, practicing to be a servant, because I feel that when, especially when I see non-devotees, I don't know how I can continue to be a servant. So I want to practice patience along with that. Because if I don't see that, okay, somebody's not realizing, then I give up. And I don't want to give up. So, again, they say patience. But even patience is not in my hands, right? I have to practice patience.
Yeah.
I don't have patience, so how do I practice patience?
You just said it, by practice. However much you have, how does anything increase? By investing it. If you have money and you want it to increase, you invest it. If you have patience and you want it to increase, you invest it. It means you utilize it. You invest it in a proper manner by which it will increase. If you try to hold it to yourself, it'll decrease. If you utilize it properly, it'll increase by practice. So whatever you have, invest it properly through practice, it will increase. And by serving Krishna and pleasing Krishna, you're doing the best welfare work for all the world. Because you can't really be the servant of everyone. You don't know everyone. You'll never see everyone. But by surrendering to Krishna, you're doing the best welfare for everyone. But you can't approach Krishna directly. That is the supreme arrogance. We approach him through his devotees, please him through his devotees. And when they are pleased, then our behavior is beneficial to the world. No, no, no. Please don't think like that.
Like books, example of the prostitute visiting Haridas Thakur for 3 days, 40 nights, and to seduce him, and later eventually she was purified. So she had approached a pure devotee with a very offensive, seductive mentality. But in just 3 days, actually, she got purified. But when I really see myself, I find that the prostitute is a much better situation, that within 3 days she was beautified, even with the offensive. There's such an offensive mentality. So, how do I address myself that what kind of consideration I be having and what should I actually do?
Well, understand that in the pastimes of the Lord, everything is sped up. The advancement of the fortunate souls and the degradation of the unfortunate souls. Gopala Chakravarti committed. Gopala Chakravarti committed Vaishnava Parad within 3 days. He had leprosy. But you know, you can see, well, you know, I've committed Vaishnava Parad. Years of leprosy. Everything is sped up in the Lord's Leela. The leprosy, the prema, the development of everything. So it means we have to be patient. But his Leela is no longer prakat. The same thing is transpire, but not as quickly. Also, you know, most of the individuals participating in this were religious in us. Their teaching by their example, what we should do, may take longer for us because we don't have those credentials to begin with. So, the same things apply, it just takes longer. Patience, determination, and enthusiasm. The qualifications outlined by the Goswami.
On that, I would have to thought that, like, if I really know the value of something, then enthusiasm, patience, and determination will follow. The mission is like, I'm not understanding the value of something which is being given to me.
If you place a huge jewel between a tiny hand, it's not within his intellectual ability to grasp its utility or value. But if you give him a tiny grain of sugar, he'll be very appreciative. You have qualifications like that at the end. You can appreciate grains of sugar you've been given. A jewel of such magnitude, you can't grasp. It's beyond the ability of the intellect to grasp its utility, value, and purpose.
Should we just?
From what I'm hearing from the great souls who understand, those who understand the nature, the value, and the application of the treasure, become eligible to be its distributors. And we hear from them. And by serving them in exchange, the grace of Krishna enters our consciousness and the words and ability to realize what is the treasure. With that realization, enthusiasm, patience, and determination grow. The one here, I'm certain, is in the face. Okay.
I get settled and the ecstatic emotions, the humility that you're speaking of, just beating up my brain to my space, and satisfy that humility. how, simply by chanting 15 rounds every day, we can come up to the same elevatedness as people who chanted 192 rounds every day. I'm not depressed, but I just feel I'm doing too little. Or I don't understand how just by 16 rounds, you know, it is possible to attain that same level of consciousness.
Don't be disappointed if you don't achieve the status of Hari Das Thakur. That would have expected you to reach that level. He's an eternal associate of the Lord. Srila Prabhupada has given a formula he sees appropriate for the Western world in the present time. That is chanting 16 rounds. And there's plenty of other things to do along with chanting 16 rounds. So if you feel like you're doing too little, there's plenty more to be done. Don't be disappointed if you don't achieve the status of Hari Das Thakur, because no one can. He's unique.
The symptoms of ecstasy, the extreme austerity sacrifices that are offered by the six Goswamis, other great personalities, is it not all, are they not setting an example for us and trying to tell us that this is how we must ultimately be?
Primarily, that's what they are doing. Because they are manjaris from Goloka, they do not need to perform austerities for their own spiritual benefit. They do it as an example for others to follow. And they go through the struggles, and they begin with a life that appears to be materialistic, and end in the life of spiritual perfection, to show us the path to follow. It is the eternal associates of the Lord that do not need to perform this sadhana, these sacrifices or austerities. We do it for our sake. It is an example for us to follow.
Following up on what you said, that in case of Lord Goswamis, when they appeared, it was around the time of evening time, and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was there. So as you said, they started with a materialistic life and ended with a spiritual life. And that was in a one lifetime. So does it mean that was also spread up? And for us, it's going to take much longer, or is it possible?
It's all a matter of your sincerity. Srila Prabhupada said, if you follow very sincerely and very strictly his instructions, you can go back to God in this lifetime, which is quite inconceivable. But that is the nature of his mercy, his potency. It depends on our sincerity, how wholeheartedly we apply ourselves. Chakravarti was arguing in that assembly that you're going to listen to the words of the sentimentalist. He's saying that mukti, which, you know, through crores of lifetimes of tapasya, one may attain, not necessarily, is all achieved by one utterance in Namabhas. He said, why are you questioning me? It's not my verdict, it's the words of the Shastra. So, you know, if the standard is that many, many lifetimes of tapasya to attain mukti. In one lifetime, we can attain bhakti. It's not ordinary. But it is possible by the mercy of pure devotee, Acharya. It is dependent on our sincerity. How wholeheartedly we follow his instructions. And Srila Prabhupada said it can be done in one lifetime. And he would like it to be done in one lifetime. Our sincerity. Strictly following wholeheartedly the process. Not a cheap thing. Now, if we say that we want to attain such a destination in one lifetime, we have to understand the seriousness of what that means. If you look at our big body, he said it is possible. It takes sincerity. Cheap thing. If we go about our settlement half-heartedly, take that goal in that period of time. Wholeheartedly.
Remaining in birth, the life, and this following, whatever.
And striving to serve the servants in a manner pleasing to them. Doesn't matter what ashram one is. It matters how sincerely he applies himself in whatever situation. Srila Prabhupada was very keen on the topic of sincerity.
It's not the amount of time that I actually spend. It's actually because we have to attend to so many things of material life, to maintain the family.
That's part of Grihastha Ashram. That's the nature of Grihastha Ashram. It's appropriate for Grihastha Ashram. As much as it's necessary, not more. Grihastha Ashram is basically raising children to become good devotees. That requires all kinds of things, income and everything else. It's not the activity, it's the consciousness. If the consciousness is, these children are servants of Krishna. I'm the servant of the servant. And you're doing your best to help them become good devotees. That is the duty of the house. And that's how you make your advancement. The duties vary for the different ashrams. So it's not what ashram, or what's in that ashram that determines our advancement. It's how sincerely, wholeheartedly, humbly, with the desire to please Guru and Vaishnavas, we execute the appropriate duties to the ashram. Many Mahaprabhu's associates were Grihasthas. It mattered to him what the Varna or Ashram was, but how sincerely one was applying himself to the principles of that Ashram.
Thank you. Like we were telling about Pranavati Sanishana, so like every day morning, I'm trying to sit a challenge and I think about that, but somehow the actual thing of tolerating and being humble and the class, I'm not sure how that is actually coming in with when we are, or I mean, I'm trying to chant, or is it possible for us to...
It's not just while you're chanting, it's all through the day.
Yes.
So what's your question?
So how to actually know the essence of the, that verse, how to actually get it in to practice?
Well, you see, when you take the process of bhakti, you're declaring you want to go home. That means that all your karma, since time immemorial of life in this world, has to be settled between now and whatever point you're going to make it. And Srila Prabhupada wanted it to be in one lifetime, although that's an achievement requiring great sincerity and wholehearted application. That means that all your karmic accounts have to be settled in whatever time it is between now and your departing from this material world. Yugas of karma have to be settled in this short period. A lot of things are going to be coming to you. A lot of reactions to previous actions. And our karmic conditioning is that when a reaction comes, we again react. The reaction becomes an action, we add another reaction to our ongoing stock of karma. Chinada Pisanichena means when the reaction comes and someone insults you because in a previous life you insulted them, and your ego says, I can't tolerate this insult, I will insult him. The reaction became another action. You reap another reaction. You just invested in your stay in this material world. You had an opportunity to terminate that whole aspect of your karma, and you chose to perpetuate it instead. Somebody comes and insults you. Thank you, Krishna. The debt has come back for payment. I just say, thank you, Krishna. Don't react. The whole thing is stopped. Settled. That's too bad to be sinister. But the false ego wants to settle it in a different way. You insult me, I'll get you back. And then the account that came to be settled got perpetuated. You reinvested your karma. And you got to stay until it comes back to you to see if you want to continue it or cancel it. The only way to cancel is to have a decent thing. You don't react. Hey, Krishna, it's come to be settled. Let it be settled, not perpetuated. The false ego, no, you can't. You must retaliate. You must express yourself. You can't be treated as a doormat. Okay, you don't have to be. But you missed an opportunity to settle that whole account, and you're going to have to wait until it comes up for review again in whatever lifetime or yuga Krishna seems worthy, appropriate. What that also means is that a life of devotee may mean more insults, more injuries. And Srila Prabhupada said, he's saying, Hare Krishna, be happy. And really, that's all you need to do. But it doesn't mean that the insults and miseries of your life are not going to increase dramatically. Because that declaration of chanting Hare Krishna means you want everything to be settled, so Krishna's going to facilitate that. But it means you have to cooperate if you want to get to reap the reward. So in all the injuries that you inflicted on others and all the insults, when they come back to you, you see it. That person is the agent of my karma. And the wonderful thing about devotional life is you're mainly associating with devotees. So who's going to be the implement of your karma? It's likely to be the devotees. So when we say don't take it personally, it doesn't mean we don't see that there's a personal benefactor behind all this orchestrating. It means you don't, that person is the cause. That person is not the cause. That person is the agent. Who's the cause? Well, you know, what did Bhumi and Dharma say when they were questioned by Maharaj Shrikhi? They gave a whole list of answers according to your consciousness, how you want to interpret it. Ultimately, you're the cause of karma. And the reaction comes from your previous action. Don't blame the other person for just bringing it back to you to be settled. He's just the agent. It's your doing. And it's your choice to perpetuate it or to cancel it. But if you want to go home, you've got to settle it. And that means you've got to tolerate it. But it doesn't mean it's... grit your teeth, bite your tongue. That means you see what it, you see it for what it is. This person is offering me a gift. The opportunity to free myself from this debt. We should be grateful to it. But, of course, it's an individual thing. Because Krishna can wipe out karma. And he can intensify karma. Or he can just let it be. And his choice as far as how to deal with it is what is best for you and me. And he's watching over every one of us in a loving, personal way, knowing what's best for us, which we don't know. So, and he's watching how we progress and how we deal with things. And he's knowing what's going to help us to make it home in as short as possible. So for one devotee, you may see, his karma is going to be too much to oppress him. Let me relieve it. All or partially, it's his choice. Or this devotee, he's got, you know, so-called good karma. He's going to be getting so much enjoyment from his previous deeds. That won't help him, so let me cancel that out. Or, you know, this devotee needs some encouragement. The weight of his karma coming back will be too much for him. Let me relieve him. Or this devotee, his reactions will just be perfect for what he needs, which is usually the case, because karma is not just some, you know, indiscriminate mechanistic arrangement. Well, it is mechanistic in a way, but it has a design to teach you. So Krishna may just let it be. I won't interfere because that'll be best for the devotee. Now Krishna knows. That's why devotee is grateful for anything and everything that comes into his life, because he knows Krishna's orchestrating it personally. You say it's not karma, but it sure looks like karma. It's the same principle, but karma's is computerized. It's not personal, it's computerized. It's automatic. But when you surrender to Krishna, he's observing. Is the computer doing the best thing for this person? Maybe it is. And then he'll leave it as it is. Maybe it's not, and then he'll change it. But he's watching. And he's involved. So it's not karma. It may look like karma. It may be the same as your karma. It may be worse. It may be easier. It's Krishna's manipulating the whole thing according to what's best for you. Therefore, it's great because it's loving. Karma is mechanistic. As you sow, you shall reap. It's mechanistic. It has a good intent behind it to edify you. But, you know, if that's what you want, then Krishna is just an observer. It's far up. But when you show him that I want to go home, then he watches over. Is the karma appropriate as it is? Does it need to be intensified? Does it need to be believed? But whatever it is, it's always grateful. Because he knows it's all Krishna's loving hand. Directing it, guiding it, adjusting it for my welfare. So, that's how Trinada Visunijena applies itself in daily life. Thank you. Anything else?
Maharaj, we see in daily life that we accept so many things based on faith. For example, just now we were telling about our, the way other people react, we should take it as the same person has reacted to us in our previous life. And you were also telling about Krishna is orchestrating personally in such a way that we progress. So all these things, presently to me, I cannot conceive it. So my question is how to conceive the inconceivable.
Begin the process and observe. For example, somebody comes and insults you. You falsely use such brutality. And you do. Your false ego feels relieved immediately. But then, you know, your consciousness gets troubled, your relationships get disrupted, people don't appreciate you, the immature way you handle that. And there are so many indications that Krishna is not pleased by your response. So when you get a philosophical understanding of things, and you try to adjust your attitudes, behaviors, and responses, responsibility means the ability to respond rather than react. So, a reaction comes back to you from your previous action. Karma, verified by false ego, says react. For every action, there's equal opposite reaction. That reaction creates another action. That's karma. That's the way the material world works. Are we robots? Can be. Or do we have free will? We can see beyond this. And do I want to be a robot, or do I want to be a servant of Krishna? I want to be a servant of Krishna. It needs to please him. Reaction comes, I don't react. I have the ability to respond. I can choose my responses. It may take practice to get it right, but you begin to take responsibility. You respond in a way that's more appropriate to a servant of the Lord. And then what do you experience? Your false ego gets insulted. And your heart feels reciprocation from Krishna. So what are you? Are you false ego? Or are you spirit soul? And then you see the dichotomy. I am a spirit soul. I have false ego. The spirit soul finds peace and satisfaction in the pleasure of Krishna, then he reciprocates when you behave properly. And then you see, and there'll be so many other indications, you know, there's attitudes towards you, and then the quality of relationships, and the quality of your own life, it indicates Krishna was pleased by that responsibility. And then you see that you're not just a robot, that, you know, deeper than the whole scheme of karma is a loving arrangement by the most merciful master to bring his loving servants back into his shelter. And whatever step we take towards him, he takes 100 towards us. And it takes a while for the false ego to adjust to this new way of looking at things. But Krishna helps us, and he gives so much encouragement and verification that you see, this is all under some loving direction. And if I respond accordingly, I'm going to see it more and more. And it'll redirect my path back to home rather than just through the endless labyrinths of material nature. Never go anywhere. So by practice, you begin to experience Krishna's reciprocation.
So Krishna's reciprocation you experience by how others react to you. That's
one way.
Okay.
The main way is there'll be a sense of satisfaction in your own heart that cannot come from anything material. It can come from peace, from the conflicts which are always plaguing us in this world. There'll be a sense of peace and satisfaction in your own heart. Of course, if you're not in touch with your heart, it may take a while to register it. But that'll be reflected and confirmed by so many other sources. Because, you know, what is it that causes our issues and conflicts with other jivas? It's not really between us and them. It's really between us and Krishna. And this is just the way it's, you know, coming to us for review. So when your relationship with Krishna improves, all other relationships will also. Not necessarily immediately, or because there's, you know, there's karma to be worked out, and there's false ego, and there's everything else, but you'll see that things start to shift in a more healthy direction as a confirmation that you're turning in the right direction. And you're acting with more integrity.
Maharaj, you said getting in touch with one's heart. I heard that similar thing in other places, like finding the center of oneself and similar things, but in different places. I want clarification of what you mean. And the second question I had was, what needs to happen for desire to transform to action?
Okay, first of all, the head is the seat of knowledge. The heart is the seat of love. You know, we understand, we analyze things with the heart, with the head. The heart feels. It's the seat of love. Because relationship with Krishna is not based on knowing or calculating. It's based on love. And that is seated in the heart where Krishna resides as Paramatma. We say had, we mean intellect. Which is a worthy gift. But integrity means the assets of the intellect and what it knows are aligned with the compass of the heart and what it feels. But we're talking about the true heart, not the sweetheart you see on Valentine's cards, which is just the target of Kamadev, which is illusion. I mean, it means, you know, the seed of true love, the Dham also means the heart. It's the residence of the Lord, and the seat of our relationship with Him. Integrity means they're aligned. And what the heart feels and what the intellect knows is aligned in the vertical direction, the will of Krishna. You know, and even in the brain, you know, you have left brain activity, right? And when, you know, the calculating part of the brain is trying to override the feelings of the heart, as it does when we're suffering from guilt, which we try to repress, and shame, which we try to deny, it means the intellect is dominating the heart. I mean, it gives so many heart attacks. So, so bhakti is a matter of the heart, and Jiva Goswami asked Lord Nityananda, you know, he was a little confused to hear that, you know, all the philosophies, including, you know, logic and reason. You know, when Matsyavatar, you know, bore the sages in the ark and awarded them shelter in Navadvipa Dham during the apocalypse, they began teaching to all those branches of knowledge, you know, logic, reason, all these, nyaya, from Navadvipa. And Jiva Goswami was, you know, a little bit confused that, you know, logic and reason, they're not necessarily compatible with bhakti. I'm surprised that they have their seat in the holy Dham. And Lord Nityananda said, there's nothing inherently inauspicious. It's a matter of relationship. If logic and reason are aligned as servants of bhakti, means alignment. Alignment means integrity. Everything's aligned with the will of the Lord. Then they're useful and helpful. But divorced from bhakti, divorced from the compass of the heart, they don't go anywhere meaningful. Does that answer that part?
So, like what you were answering before, when somebody insults you, and so the application of principles was what you had said before, like that is alignment, right? Like this is coming to me, there the intelligence is trying to find, when he is reasoning that this is coming to me from my own purification.
Yeah. With the intellect, you're understanding philosophically what is going on here. But the heart, but it has to be directed by the heart. What does the heart want? The heart wants to be free of all this material action, reaction, samsara. The heart wants Krishna. If you want Krishna, you have to become free. So the intellect, so the heart's guiding the intellect at that point. The intellect, as Lord Nityananda explained to Jiva Goswami, when the intellect is aligned with the heart, when logic and reason and intellect and everything is aligned with bhakti, subservient to bhakti, then it's useful. It's desirable. So the heart wants Krishna. The intellect, you know, analyzes the situation accordingly. Okay, well, you got, you know, this karma to work out. How does it work out? Well, it comes to you. How you respond determines whether you perpetuate it, whether you cancel it, conclude it, terminate it, find closure. So the intellect, you know, philosophically analyzes accordingly, but it follows the heart. Because the intellect can also follow the false ego. This person insulted me. That's not just. That's injustice. I will get him back. No, it's the same intellect, but it's working under a different master. And you'll find lots of guides in this world who will tell you not to be a doormat. And we're not suggesting you become a doormat either. Humility doesn't mean become a doormat. Humility means you can't actually stand up, take responsibility, stop being a doormat.
So, many times I have found myself where my instinct is to react, but sometimes because of the reasoning that, you know, sometimes I'm able to tell myself, I don't want to react to this because it might be a reaction from my karma, I mean, reaction from a past action, it might be from my own purification. The very reason that I am feeling something like this shows this impurity in me and so on.
Yeah. And by acting on it, you'll reinforce it.
Yeah. But that doesn't happen always. And I could understand when you said that the intelligence, I think the intelligence is guided by false ego or something. So I respond when that happens, but so that happens most of the time.
You react then.
Yeah.
It's not really responding.
Yeah,
really
I react most of the time, so although there is reasoning that I shouldn't be doing that, but I didn't get it when he said that it, or rather I don't know what my heart wants.
That's a common phenomenon in the world these days. Chant Hare Krishna. Hear about Krishna. Because when you hear the wonderful qualities and pastimes of Krishna, at some point you feel something stirring down here. This is what I want. As you interact with mature devotees and you feel the love, the kindness, the compassion, the qualities of Krishna coming through them, and you feel something, this is what I want to be part of. It's beyond intellect. The intellect will help you get there. At a certain point, the intellect has to be left behind. Or at least the conditioned intellect. Yeah. Yes. And of course you'll hear from, you know, all kinds of psychologists and psychiatrists and everybody else and get in touch with your heart, but they don't know themselves because they're talking, there's different levels to it. You know, some people are just so completely out of touch with their heart they don't even know what their false ego wants. We're not talking about that, although that may be a stage you have to go through. We're talking about what you feel in the presence of gentle, loving devotees the sound of the holy name, the pastimes of Krishna and Vrindava, you feel something. Where's it coming from? Deeper layers of levels of your heart. So what do? Go on hearing, go on associating, go on serving. And it, you know, it becomes more and more the dominant experience and desire in your life. And guiding factor of your life. So go on hearing, go on chanting, go on serving. More and more. Come in touch with those deeper layers as the more superficial layers are cleansed away. By Krishna's mercy. It's a very common phenomenon these days that people are just out of touch with their hearts. Could be a factor in so much heart disease. I'm not saying it's the only one, but it's one. But that can mean different things. We're talking about your heart of hearts, which is the abode of the Lord within you. That contact is obtained by hearing, chanting, associating, serving, purified souls. Just like if a person has amnesia, you know, amnesia. Forget. You forget who you are. You forget everything. Isn't that amnesia? You forget who you are. It happens to people. It's his disease or whatever you call it. You forget who they are. Well, what do you do with such a person? You put them in their natural setting. Their home, with their relatives or family members, and it stimulates an awakening and remembrance. Well, bhakti is the same thing. We have amnesia. We've forgotten who we are. We're residents of the spiritual world. Servants of the servants of... We forgot. And it's just like such an alien thing to us. But beginning with those devotees in who Krishna has placed us, here and now, remember, it starts coming. This is my family. These are the people from my home. And then it just develops more and more. And as it develops, your association and everything else will also change with it, just to kindle more and more that remembrance of who you are and where your home is and where you belong. It's bhakti. Bhakti is the practice of who you really are. And by the practice, the remembrance awakens gradually. And the amnesia is cured. Is this another part of your question?
How does desire transform to action? And actually, I have a third question. If you can define infinity.
Desire transforms into action just by taking the initiative. But But you have to analyze, is it proper desire, is it proper action? Because, you know, false ego has its own desires, its own set of desires, unlimited set of desires. And you don't want to act on those, because acting on those reinforces them. So first of all, we have to analyze, is this proper desire seeking expression in proper action? So first analyze philosophically. And if the verification is there philosophically, then you just take the initiative. Act. And you won't always know exactly the right thing to do. If you take the initiative, and Krishna will guide you through. And sincerity, it's closely related to simplicity. And what is simplicity? The antithesis of duplicity. In the very, very dramatic pastimes of Shoka Haridas, the acharyas give elaborate step-by-step purports of what this, you know, how to understand this, because it's very shocking that Mahaprabhu would reject his own intimate associate, whose only mistake was he was really following the instructions of his spiritual master. He went begging. There was a young girl there, and he really didn't do anything wrong. Mahaprabhu said he was glancing lustfully at a young lady. Well, who was the young lady? Madhava Devi was an old lady. Some say there was a young girl there also. But the acharyas give elaborate explanations that Lord Chaitanya had to choose a very intimate associate of his to treat in such a harsh way, to give lesson to us on this very crucial matter, that one thing Mahaprabhu cannot tolerate is duplicity. Duplicity means deception. You say and act one way, but you have another motive. Simplicity means there's no such duality or dichotomy between your words, your actions, your behavior. And there again, we're back to integrity. Everything's aligned, everything's integrated. Words, desires, actions are all integrated. It doesn't mean that they're necessarily all purified, but you acting in such a way as to purify them. And that's where discrimination comes in, that you choose the appropriate behavior and action to act upon. So sincerity is closely related to simplicity. No duplicity. That your words, your actions, your desires are all integrated. And they're chosen. That doesn't mean you don't have false ego. It means you don't act on it. Or maybe you do sometimes just because you're overwhelmed by circumstances. But it means, as a matter of course, you're choosing your response. You're not reacting karmically. Okay. Anything else?
Another question I was just trying to understand what you were saying about Sananda Vishnu. And what you said, is it like we just resign to our already performed activities in the past and just let it gradually unfold?
unfold and unwind. But there again, now there's another thing to consider. We have a duty. See, basically humility means truth. But, you know, theoretically you can divide it into truth and humility as different aspects of the same thing. If somebody comes and accuses you of something you didn't do, it doesn't mean to say, yeah, I did it. That's a lie. It means you say, in a not a reactive, but a chosen, sober, mature response, no, I didn't. And if they insist, yes, you did, then you've done your duty to truth. Now you do your duty to humility. They're going to insist. Well, you said the truth. Leave it at that. Don't defend yourself. Express yourself maturely. And then let it go. And that'll be more powerful. If you get reactive, then you... If you get reactive, you're confessing your own guilt. If you express, no, that's not true. I mean, it's peaceful about it. You give credence to your words. I mean, they're all reactive, and it's false ego at work, and nobody's going to take it seriously as far as anything spiritual. But it means we have to learn from the trees and the grass and the straw in the street. You have those on your planet? Nature is the alphabet of spirit. But it is coded, C-O-D-E-D, coded is a code to the language of nature. It can be interpreted in different ways. If you want the proper interpretation, is a key to the code, and the key is humility. And then you see that everything is a lesson. All the experience in this world are lessons. Preparing me for my final exam. Humility means you see in that light. This world is not all in all. It's an institution to prepare us for our final exam for the purpose of graduating. It's not all in all. It's a halfway house. It's not home. All right. Anything else?
I'm successive in the first line is Jeto Dharma Mantra.
Yeah.
You purify your mind.
Yeah.
Pretending Hare Krishna. So, and also I was reading in fourth canto and conversations between Daksha and one of the purports that Prabhupada said that you can cleanse the mirror of your mind by chanting Hare Krishna. You can see Krishna through your mind. So, how can I, if mind is material, how can I see something non-material by
it? There's a material mind, there's also a spiritual mind. And the spiritual mind and the heart are one, they're integrated. So, you know, Mahaprabhu, in his dialogue with Lord Jagannath as he was dancing down the road in Puri, for most people the mind and the heart are one. But my mind is none different from Vrindavan. I know you're very fond of Vrindavan. You can please love to sleep there. And in different translations of that verse, you know, sometimes it's mirror of the mind, sometimes it's mirror of the heart. In the pure sense, they're almost interchangeable because they're so closely integrated. But why is whatever it is, heart or mind, whatever term you choose, why is it a mirror? Why is that metaphor used? In the Hebrew tradition, there's a prophet Malachi who preached in terms of questions and answers with the Lord. And he likened the Lord to a goldsmith. So a goldsmith takes, you know, when you get gold ore, it's, you know, it's rock and all kinds of other things with gold mixed in with it. And you put it in the crucible and you put it in the fire. You heat it hotter and hotter and hotter. And then it's like making ghee. The impurities come to the top. Skim it off, skim it off. Until when there's nothing but pure gold left, the goldsmith can see his image in the gold very clearly. So he said, this is like the process of purifying the heart. Krishna puts us through the fire of ordeal, and then those things that fail us get discarded, and it helps us discriminate, you know, what is the substance. But the substance, you can see your reflection, you can see the maker's reflection, you can see the goldsmith's reflection, because they're all interconnected. The pure gold serves as a reflection of the Lord, to reflect it in our own lives and our own hearts and in those around us. But it doesn't work without purification. Otherwise, all you're seeing reflected and influencing everything is false ego. Insignificant jiva claiming what's not his. So, the purified heart reflects the Lord and his qualities in our lives and those around us. But that generally necessitates going through the fire. With gratitude to this special person. Okay. Anything else? Thank you all very much for your eager, sincere association. Thank you.